Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording from our 2024 Passover Learning Series with TBA Rabbinic Intern Ben Siegel.
Welcome, everyone. We're talking tonight about welcoming curiosity to the Seder, our curiosity and the curiosity of those around us. And before I get started, I've got like a whole text sheet that I will share in a moment. But before I go ahead and share that, anyone know where the four questions come from?
The Mishnah. But yeah, there are different questions, and then they're pulled from Torah text just by using the same, because the same words appear.
Yeah. So right on. Starts in the Mishnah, and it takes a long time, and we're going to kind of trace it a little bit tonight, how we go from what's in the Mishnah, which is three quarters of what we're used to saying of the four questions, to what we actually have today. But then there's this whole question of why do we even say them at all? And that's really the point of what I want to get into. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll do two things. I'm going to, in the chat, I'm going to share, the source sheet. Give me 1 second just to pull it up. So I just went ahead and shared it in the source sheet, in the chat for those who want. But I will also go ahead and share my screen so we're all literally on the same page. Great. So everyone can see the source sheet?
Yep.
Great. Okay. So here we have the from the Haggadah, the four questions, right? Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halilot, shevechol halilot, anu ochlin chameitzu matzah, halayla hazeh kulo matzah. On this night we eat, on all other nights we eat chameitzu matzah, on this night we only eat matzah. Shevechol halilot, anu ochlin sha'ar yerakot, halayla hazeh kulo maror. Some texts apparently only have maror. I'm used to kulo maror, but regardless, on all other nights, we eat other vegetables. Tonight, only maror, or tonight, maror. Shevechol halilot, inanu matbilin afilu pamachat. Halayla hazeh shtei fe'amim. On all other nights, we don't dip our food even one time, and tonight, we dip it twice. And then finally, shevechol halilot, anu ochlin bein yoshvin uvein mesubin. Halayla hazeh kulanu mesubin. On all other nights, we eat either sitting or reclining, and tonight we recline. This is a text that we're probably all fairly familiar with if we've been to Seders for our entire lives, which chances are most of us have, because it's the most attended Jewish ritual event. From what I understand, it's, if I remember correctly, the statistic is it's like 80-something percent of all Jews, regardless of whether or not they're religious, do some form of a Pesach Seder. I mean, these statistics are probably 15 years old, because that's how deep into my memory they are. But it's like up there with fasting on Yom Kippur, that this is like one of those things that even people who don't know, like, couldn't actually do all of Kiddush, couldn't do, like, don't know their way through Shabbat service, this is still something that is really, the Seder itself is something that's really important to us. And this is one of those things that I remember learning from the youngest of ages in religious school. Because as soon as you're able to ask these questions, that's the expectation. So for all those who know, I have a just shy of 3-month-old. So next year I'm expecting him to ask all these questions.
Ben, yeah. You know, 3 months, I like what 3 months has taught you about parenthood. Good luck with that.
A year and 3 months. A year and 3 months. He can.
Oh, sorry. I only heard that. I only heard that. Either way,
No.
I'd say the same thing. I'd say the same.
3 months. I'll be happy if he can make it through any of the Seder. But anyhow, I want to move us into, as you mentioned, Tybalt, where this actually comes from. So this is from the Mishnah. Can I get a volunteer to read the just the English text?
I'll read.
Thank you, Bonnie.
The attendants poured the second cup for the leader of the Seder, and here the child asks their father the questions about the differences between Passover night and a regular night. And if the child does not have the intelligence to ask questions, wait, I lost my place, on their own, their father teaches them the questions. The Mishnah lists the questions. Why is this night different from all other nights? As on all other nights, we eat leavened bread and matzah as preferred. On this night, all our bread is matzah. As on all other nights, we eat other vegetables. On this night, we eat bitter herbs. The Mishnah continues its list of the questions. When the temple was standing, one would ask, as on all other nights, we eat either roasted, stewed, or cooked meat, but on this night, all the meat is the roasted meat of the Paschal lamb.
Sorry, I just want to make sure it's all
That's
there.
okay. I have to find my place. But the final question was asked even after the destruction of the temple. As on all other nights, we dip the vegetables in a liquid during the meal only once. However, on this night, we dip twice. And according to the intelligence and the ability of the son, his father teaches him about the Exodus. When teaching his son about the Exodus, he begins with the Jewish people's disgrace and concludes with their glory. And he expounds from the passage, an Aramean tried to destroy my father. The declaration one recites when presenting his first fruits at the temple, until he concludes explaining the entire section.
So this is has a little bit of commentary in this translation. Actually, a lot of commentary in this translation. And I tried to pull some of it out, but some of it is also interesting for conversation. I will own up to the fact that I tried changing all of the sons into children, and I missed one or two of them. Because I don't think, and the reason with that translation at least is because I don't actually think that the original text really cared as much as some of these translations do about the gender of the child. It does definitely care about the gender of the parent. But what do we have here in terms of differences from what we're used to?
Well, obviously the one that they reference about the Paschal lamb, we don't bring up, but that's they point out, or is that only the
that's just
commentary the that was only done when it was standing. But that's a classic question that you would clearly have if you're accustomed to having various kinds of your meat prepared various different ways, and this night it's always this way.
Yeah. 100%. It is commentary about it being during the temple time that we'll see other sources kind that we're going to go through fill in. But we don't ask that question at all. And there's one question that we ask that isn't here.
Reclining.
Yeah. So I think we're going to get into it in another source. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's a reason why these two questions eventually get switched out for each other. So that's where we start from in the time of the Mishnah. If you want to make your Seder very quick and easy, do a Mishnaic Seder. It's not going to be 5 hours long unless you add a lot onto it. But it can be an interesting experience, especially if you're trying to make like a real Seder experience for kids. So that's where all of this starts out at. And then we dive into this question in the Gemara of why children, like what's going on with the children at the Seder, and why are we even asking these questions at all? Can I get another volunteer to read the English here?
So this is children at the Seder as opposed to, right? Gemara, the sages taught, if his child is wise and knows how to inquire, his child asks him. And if they are not wise, his wife asks him. And if even his wife is not capable of asking, or if he has no wife, he asks himself. Need I go further? Even if the Torah, if two Torah scholars who know the halachot of Passover are sitting together and there is no one else present to pose the questions, they ask each other. The Mishnah states that one of the questions is, why is this night different from all their nights? On all their nights, we dip once. However, on this night, we dip twice. It's not what we just read, but that's what it says here. Rava strongly objects to this statement of the Mishnah. Is that to say that on every other day there is no alternative but to dip once? Is there an obligation to dip at all on other days, as indicated by the words of the Mishnah? Rather, Rava said that this is what the Mishnah is teaching. As on all other nights, we are not obligated to dip even once. However, on this night, we are obligated to dip twice. Rav Safra strongly objects to this explanation. Is it obligatory for the children? As previously mentioned, the reason one dips twice is to encourage the children to ask questions. How can this be called an obligation? Rather, Rav Safra said that this is what the Mishnah is teaching. We do not normally dip even once. However, on this night, we dip twice. This wording is preferable as it indicates the performance of an optional act.
Great. So you picked up on what they're getting into here in the Gemara, Henry, that the text isn't exactly the same. And that's probably because by the time that this text makes it to the day and age of Rava and Rav Safra, the text actually has changed one way or another. And so there's already this sense that that there's some flexibility with the questions that we're asking at the Seder. But one of the things I wanted to go back to the beginning there. Based on this opening passage here that I'm highlighting about like who's asking these questions, what does it feel like the point even is of asking questions? Yeah, Tybel?
That it's a process that you have to keep doing. It's not like, particularly the example of the two Torah scholars, one still has to ask the other, because those are clearly learned. Those would clearly know the body of law or whatever that's been decided. A certain sense, dealing with things that aren't decided, aren't static. And even though there's some things that get decided and reopened, this gets reopened annually. And that's what has to happen.
Yeah. Great. Other thoughts on why we're asking questions, especially when we talk about it, either being children, all the way from children up to Torah scholars, asking questions of ourselves, right? There's a famous story to that on that front. At the end of his life, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was single. He survived his wife. And he would do Seder by himself. And even he asked himself questions as the head of a Hasidic dynasty. what's the purpose of him asking questions, the same questions potentially that like a 2-year-old is asking?
Well, it seems to me that it's indicating the importance of questioning in Judaism, that we're always reaching to find something different or new or understanding in a different way.
Yeah. And I think, Taiba, what you were saying also kind of ties into this, but even this is an annual ritual, and yet we're different every year that we come up to Pesach, right? We've experienced a whole nother year of learning, of growth, of life experience. And we're going to approach these questions the same way, in the same way that every year when we get to, I don't know, Tazria Mitzora, we're going to see that parsha in a slightly different light than we did the year before. Right? All our lives are constantly building on each other, on each consecutive year, and our understanding is going to change from that. And so the questions we ask are going to change from that too. What are the questions? I'm curious, what are the questions that stand out to you about Pesach in this day and age? Feel free to unmute yourself and just share. Yeah.
I think the main thing that I'm interested in understanding more about is the reason I really came this evening was to find out about something that Rabbi Troine was going to talk about. But the global question is, why do we make it so hard to observe this holiday if you really want to observe it in quote unquote the formal way, right? Back in the Mishnah, in those days, there was some restrictions, but it wasn't like, you know, you had to be so exact about all of these little details. I'm certain that they weren't that precise about all of these little details that we seem to worry about in the 21st century. So, you know, in particular around food. So I'm just trying to understand how come we got here. Why did we do this?
And that's a great question. And it's not even like we don't even have to go back to Mishnaic times to see that things have changed significantly. I would imagine that for those of us, our ancestors who came over to America, we're not observing Passover in anywhere near as scrupulous of a way as we are expected to do if we're like observing Passover today. Other questions that people are sitting with about Passover?
My main concern has to do with my own personal freedoms and the freedoms of others, more of an introspective look at where I personally am falling short of feeling and being free, and how I can use the Seder as a jumping off point. I know the Omer comes on the second night, but it's this idea of my own personal journey and where, and really on the first night, figuring out where I am stuck, where I am not free. And then having that kind of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think freedom seems to be this theme that comes up in different ways every year as we approach Pesach. It's one of the underlying ideas behind it. And there are all sorts of different drashot on what it means to have our own Exodus moment in today's day and age. I'll take one more question. Go ahead.
If you don't have time.
Go for it.
Okay. So the short version is I'm disabled, so I could never do the Pesach meal. But pre-pandemic, I have one friend who loved to cook, but she didn't like to lead, so I would go and lead. And I also have this thing where I try to buy 1 to 3 new Haggadot each year, only like one copy, but try to think about something new. And I will tell you, the big thing for me is this year, it's because of Rabbi Rembaum. in his Bible class, and it's something I had just never focused on before. And it's why I had that one image up already, which is that elsewhere in Torah and in prophets and in some commentary, Tom is a good thing. It's simple. It's not simple. It's pure, wholehearted. It's applied to Noah. It's applied to Jacob. It's this. I mean, it was considered a good thing all the way up to Rabbeinu Tom. And that's the same Tom. And I had never put that together. So this year, a big focus is really going to be how people, in a sense, rank the children, because to me, it totally upends what it used to be. And that's why I had the image of, from the Rabbinical Assembly, Haggadah, Feast of Freedom, I think it's called, from many years ago, that shows different colors, all four children within all of us. And I've looked at that for years. Anyway, and it's very text-based. And for me, it's a break from the 6 months ago events to focus on the text-based. But it's also so unexpected, because since I have a little kid, I've thought his simple child, well, that's not a good thing. And now to me, it looks like the best in some way.
Yeah. This question of what does it mean to, like, why are these children like the archetype children that we turn to, and where does the simple child land in that framework? So these are all wonderful questions. And I think we all also know that these are not the questions that children are going to be asking at a Seder. What are the sorts of questions that we've heard children ask at a Seder, or that they might be interested in?
When can we eat?
When can we eat? Okay, that's everyone potentially, but yes.
I will say that one year when I was at a Seder with a lot of early 20s, they're still kids, they're 18, 20, they're not the little ones. They really wanted to know what the relevance of the Seder was to their everyday lives. Why? And when the leader would ask certain kinds of questions that were really very meaningful to them, then they really started to participate, more kind of contemporary, if you will, or, modern day questions about what a lot of things mean to them. And so that's not the little kids, but I'm just particularly remembering that actually the year before the pandemic. And so I just want to share that.
Yeah, thank you, Marian. There is this sense, I think, especially among young adults, kids who are going through that age where they're trying to understand their identity. Passover has a lot to do with Jewish identity, right? It is our foundation story as a people. And so there are going to be a lot of identity-related questions. Bonnie?
Yeah, I think that a lot of children, the Seder does not go into all of the differences in what we can and cannot eat at all. And I remember when my children were young, that was a big thing. It doesn't explain why we don't eat those particular grains and things like that. And before we were allowed to eat kidney oat, my daughter wanted to know how come her friend who was Sephardic could eat peanut butter on his matzah. So there were those kinds of questions.
Yeah, these differences in the foods are very much so things that kids are going to pick up on and wonder about. My wife and I were actually having a question about what sort of an idea of Passover could our 3-month-old Shai actually have this year? Like, what is he going to pick up on from Passover? And the one thing that we settled in on is he will be able to pick up on the fact that this night is different from the other nights, that we're doing something different, right? The kids are really good on picking up at those differences. And so that's something in general that the kids are going to pick up on. And that's very intentionally baked into the entire Seder. And there's one last one that I want to share, Before we move on in the text, which is, I was at a Seder once, and one of the kids at the table asked, "Where did the frogs come from?" Right? Like, it's something, it's a story we're all used to all the time. And we've never quite thought of, like, did they just like appear? Did they sprout up from tadpole? Like, where did all these frogs come from? Where did any of the plagues really come from? And it can spout, it can turn into some really good conversation about how do we understand God's role in all this? How do we understand God? And it all comes from this one night. So I want to move on in the text to something that's going to kind of speak to that a little bit. It's actually in the Gemara from before what we were talking about, which is why you'll see something in the like unbolded text that's referencing it. So can I get another volunteer to read the English here? Bonnie, is that you?
Okay. I can read.
Go for it, Marcy.
Yeah. The Gemara asks, why does one remove the table? The school of Rabbi Yanai say, so that the children will notice that something is unusual and they'll ask, why is this night different from all other nights? The Gemara relates, Abaya was sitting before Rabbah when he was still a child. He saw that they were removing the table from before him, and he said to those removing it, we've not yet eaten and you're taking the table away from us? Rabbah said to him, you have exempted us from reciting the questions of why is this night different, Manish Tana, as you were already asked, what is special about the Seder night?
So just a little bit of background on what's happening at the beginning here, because this isn't something that we do anywhere near this way in today's day and age. It used to be that everyone had their own table and it would be removed from them before they, like at the beginning of the Magid section, and then it would be brought back for the meal. And the exact purpose of it was to get people to ask questions. Now, some people have a tradition of removing the Seder plate, and that's where that comes from, is removing the table, removing. Leads to us, obviously we're not going to move a massive 12-foot table out of the dining room, although that would be really interesting to watch, but and would certainly have kids asking what's different about tonight. But we can do it enough just by removing all the food that's from in front of us before we actually sit down to eat. Yeah, Bonnie?
I just want to say, so I don't have a very large home, and I used to invite many people. And so we did. We had to move the couches and the chairs out of the way. And then we had to bring the kitchen table into the living room area and turn the other table and gather chairs from the attic. So we were moving a lot of furniture. And I think it was part of the Seder that the kids enjoyed, you know, the difference that we had for that those two nights.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben, you know, when I first read through this before you gave the explanation of what was going on, I had a whole different understanding of what was happening.
I'm curious, what was it?
So I was under the impression that normally they would sit at a table to eat, but in this case, they were going to force people to lean like they did in the Greeks, and they were removing the table so that you had to recline to eat.
Interesting. Hold on to that thought for a second, because I said we were going to get into the question of why the not reclining was talked about. We are still going to get there.
So that was exactly what I went to with this explanation.
Yeah. So what does it seem like the point of having four questions is based off of this text?
To engage the people at the table in learning and reviewing the history.
Yeah. We're not supposed to be like just repeating things over and over again. We're supposed to be asking questions. Tybo?
Could a table be seen as a physical separation? So it's connecting and more in community not to have a table?
Yeah. That's entirely plausible that you're bringing people together to actually tell the story. They don't have something from something that's separating them. Marian?
Unmute. Oh, there we go. I feel like it's to make it active, and not just passive. We're not just sitting there and listening to a sermon or a text. I mean, people do pass around to read and that kind of thing. But there's something about a question that gets people involved and active and not so passive.
Yeah, these questions aren't really supposed to be like form questions that come with form answers, like we've kind of turned them into. They're really supposed to be the jumping off point for us to ask more and more questions, which is why it says at the end here that Rabba's asking questions about what's going on, or why Abaye's asking questions about what's going on here exempts them from saying Manishtana. Because the whole point is just to be asking questions. And if you can't ask the questions, well, we've got a list to at least start you off on the right path. One other note, I don't need to go through all of this text. You'll have it available to you I put it in the chat, but this is from the Mishneh Torah from Rambam, so like 12th, 13th century in Egypt. And one of the things that he brings up is like he starts to at least give us an answer for why it is that these questions turn into what they are. So one of the things that he brings up is we don't ask this question about roasted meat anymore because there's no temple. There isn't a formal paschal offering. So it wouldn't make sense, right? There are some people today who, because there isn't a temple, will specifically not eat lamb on the night of a Seder because that was what was supposed to be eaten in the days of the temple. And there are some people who will specifically eat it as a remembrance of it. So regardless of how you look at it, you have two different traditions. Not everyone is doing it anymore. Yeah, Tybel?
I was going to say my father's family threw one of his lines as a tradition of, I can't even tell you how many generations, that the day before at lunch is when you eat lamb.
Yeah.
And even though grew up American immigrants, 10 children, very, very poor, he very much remembers having lamb the day before. Oh, wait, was it the day before or the morning, the lunch before the first Seder? I have to think about it. Probably the lunch before the first Seder when it was still the 14th. Anyway.
Yeah.
But that's the way his family tradition combined the two.
Mm-hmm. So that's that question. And then the other thing that this brings in, Henry, to kind of reference what you were talking about, is that the question of reclining at the Seder wouldn't have made sense in the time of the Mishnah because that's just how everyone ate. Like generally, you would eat reclining if you had any sort of means. And so it wouldn't be odd to do it on Pesach night because you were doing it every night and every other night. And if the whole point is to make this night different, then you're not doing anything different. You don't have a question to even ask. But I want to close text-wise at least with this Tosfot, which is commentary on the Talmud that's written in the East or Western Central Europe in the 10th, 11th century. It's Rashi's grandkids and people of that generation. And they comment on this idea of the child asking questions. And the point of it, they say, is it is as if by asking this, they will come to ask more questions. However, if they only ask the one question about removing the table, they're still not exempt from the Manishtana. So it's not about getting them to just ask one question, right? It's about continuing this curiosity throughout the entire night, getting them enough of a head start that they now feel comfortable asking questions throughout the entire night. And so that so that they're really trying to be involved in what's going on and understand what's going on. And going back to the Gemara text we had about who's asking these questions, it's not just for them to be asking questions. It's for all of us to be asking questions, to be wondering, why do we do this and not that throughout the entire night, so that this really becomes an experience where we're all involved and where we're all trying to understand what do I take away from Pesach this year that I haven't taken away from past years? Because we're going to approach it with different curiosities than we have in the past.
And the mere fact that you're asking all these questions all night already just makes it a different night, because in most nights you'd be saying, enough questions already.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to encourage all of us as we go into Pesach. For many of us, it's not anywhere near our first Pesach. And at the same point, we're going to be approaching it very differently than we did last year. Really try and bring your curiosity in, especially if you don't have children who may already be bringing in their curiosity. But even if you do have children at the Seder with you, because your curiosities are not going to be the same as theirs. Yeah, Bonnie?
So an interesting thing about children and questions is as the kids were growing up, and sometimes they would invite their friends who were maybe not very knowledgeable or they were not Jewish. And those children often had the best questions. It was always very interesting at the Seder in those times.
Yeah. My in-laws, they regularly hosted Seder for anyone who needed a place. They were one of the Seders for those who were of a different religion who wanted to see what this was all about. Except for the one year that they didn't know that they were doing that. I wrote about that a couple of weeks ago for Taste of Torah, I think. That one year my in-laws ended up with Christian missionaries at the table. That's a slightly different experience, but they were also asking interesting questions, I'm sure. But yeah, it's a very different environment when you have different people there, and everyone's going to bring their own background.
Can I add something to the other conversation, the other question you asked earlier? You know, when I go to, when most of us go to events, when almost all of us go to events and ask a question, and someone afterwards will ask, so how was the event? Oftentimes you'll remember the question that you asked if you go to hear a speaker. And really, I think the reason why we have to say the four questions is because once you speak or say anything or declare anything, it's something that will stick with you for longer than anything that you heard. It's more likely to stick with you. And I think that's really why we have to, even if we've had a question, but we have to go through the four questions, because then we'll remember them and they each are important for the lessons that we learned from them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's science to back that up, that the best way to learn is to teach someone else.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am, Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.